He sat up in his open window, looking quietly down at the path. A firefly flew in his room and flew right out again. Down jumped the prince, and he went again to find his radio.
My name is Liz Kirkus from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acra, Catskill, and Hudson.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we will speak to Oshun Zotik, the Hudson man who was running for Congress until a few days ago when he pulled out of the congressional election for the New York 19 district. We'll hear from him about his reasons why he pulled out and how difficult it is to run for Congress. We'll also hear the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate and national headlines from the Public News Service. And it all begins after the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
Sunday, July 3rd, world-renowned harpist Mary Lattimore performs at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock at 8 p.m., and you can find out all about the event on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Lattimore has played harp on records with Kurt Vile, Thurston Moore, Sharon Van Etten, Meg Baird, and many others, and comes from Los Angeles to Woodstock on Sunday, July 3rd at the Colony Cafe at 8 p.m. Go to WGXC.org in the community calendar to find out more about this event and many others.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that New York lawmakers and Governor Kathy Hochul have reached an agreement in concept on a legislative package intended to address the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that struck down the state's century-old concealed carry law for firearms. Lawmakers are expected to vote on the package on June 30th, which will restrict where guns can be carried, including places where children gather, polling places, educational institutions, and public transit. Licensing requirements for concealed carry permits will be expanded, and live fire training at gun ranges will be required. In addition, background checks for ammunition purchases will be required, as will safe storage of firearms in cars. Private businesses, including bars, must affirmatively state with a sign that permitted guns can be carried. Hochul on June 29th in Albany said the fine details of the measures were being discussed with lawmakers. The governor called the SCOTUS ruling last week, quote, totally out of touch, unquote, with what most New York residents want. Quote, we're going to continue to make sure we toughen those laws, unquote, she added. Quote, this is not the Wild West. This is New York State, unquote. The proposed changes will likely face a legal challenge as well. Hochul said the proposals have been reviewed by legal experts and think tanks that have studied the issue. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Mid-Hudson News reports that Brandon Gaylord, a history teacher and Chatham Planning Board member, defeated Town of Clinton councilperson Dean Michael in the 106th Assembly District Republican primary election to take on Democrat Assemblyperson Dee Dee Barrett in November. Voting ended June 28th. Gaylord got 1,792 votes to Michael's 1,540. The district includes parts of Columbia and Dutchess County, with Gaylord winning more votes in his home county, Columbia, and Michael getting more votes in Dutchess County, where he lives. Michael lost by almost 10,000 votes to Barrett in 2020. The 106th district includes parts of Dutchess and Columbia counties. In March of this year, the Dutchess County GOP committee nominated Columbia County's Brandon Gaylord to oppose Barrett. After failing to get the committee's endorsement, Michael went to work to secure Republican signatures on petitions to force a primary against Gaylord, a Columbia County Republican. And you can read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Mara Rosner reports for Columbia Green Media that the village of Kinderhook will receive more than $1,860,000 to build pedestrian and bicycle improvements along Albany Avenue. Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado said, quote, New York is committed to moving projects like this forward that will not only help lower emissions using transportation alternatives, but will also mitigate traffic congestion and help improve connectivity, air quality, and access for predominantly low and moderate income families, unquote. A total of almost $179 million will be provided to support transportation enhancements in 75 communities around New York. The funding will support the construction of new sidewalks and shared use paths to better ensure pedestrian and bicycle safety, facilitating access to the transportation system for users of all ages and abilities. Kinderhook Village Mayor Michael Abrams could not be reached for comment about the award. Governor Kathy Hochul announced June 28th that the town of Catskill will receive $10.2 million in clean water project funds through long-term and interest-free financing to serve the Leeds and Jefferson Heights Sewer District. The funding will also be used to install mechanical screening at the Leeds and Jefferson Heights sewer plant. The New York State Water Infrastructure Improvement Program has already awarded $3.15 million to the town's water improvement project. The town of Catskill's $10.2 million award ranks second to the $15 million granted to Oneida County. Eight municipalities, including Catskill and Oneida County, will receive funding through the Clean Water Project. In Catskill, the money will pay for needed improvements in water pollution standards. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Michael Goodwin reports in the Times Union that an inmate was killed and another injured at the Greenhaven Correctional Facility in Dutchess County, but state police released very little information about the incident. They did not say when the homicide occurred or how the prisoner was killed. They did not give details on the injury to another person. They did not release the names of either inmate. They did not say if anyone will face charges. They only released that there was an incident at Greenhaven Prison that holds about 2,100 prisoners. You can read the full story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News reports a Rockland County resident has been diagnosed with monkeypox, according to county health officials. Testing was conducted at the state's Wadsworth Center Laboratory. The confirmed case is limited to one person who has not had any contact with anyone locally and poses no risk to county residents. As of June 28th, a total of 61 confirmed cases have been identified in New York State, including 55 in New York City, 4 in Westchester County, 1 in Sullivan County, and 1 in Chemung County. Monkeypox cases in this outbreak have involved a rash, often in the genital and perianal areas, and may also include other symptoms, including fever, swollen lymph nodes, and pain when swallowing, before or after the rash appears. Most infections last 2 to 4 weeks. Those who experience symptoms consistent with monkeypox should contact their health care provider. Information about monkeypox can be found at the State Health Department website. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
The Daily Freeman reports that New York's first legal recreational cannabis crop since New York banned the plant in 1940 is beginning to sprout. Frank Papalizzo of Homestead Farms and Ranch, just north of Albany, said, and I quote, "Hopefully it benefits the farmers. Been a long time since there's been a real cash crop," end quote. Papalizzo is an amateur wrestling coach and promoter who also raises cows, turkeys, and chickens to sell to humans as food and has never used cannabis himself. He said, and I quote, "I'm open-minded, and I've come to understand that there is a value," end quote. Cannabis grown outdoors is weaker than if grown under indoor lights, but some prefer it. Grower Moke Mokotoff of Claverick Creek Farm said, and I quote, "It's called sun-grown marijuana, and a lot of aficionados just like the way it smokes better," end quote. Costs are lower as sunlight is free, but there are other threats outside, such as insects and thieves. Mokotoff said, and I quote, "We plan to have people sleeping in the field," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Thursday, sunny with a high near 83 degrees. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low of around 61 degrees. And on Friday, mostly sunny and hot with a high near 93 degrees. And Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy with the temperature low of around 68 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Thursday, June 30th at WGXC, including at 10 a.m. It's time for Cheryl Kay's Situation Fluxes show, all about jazz, and she's in conversation with vocalist Shiri Zorn and guitarist George Muscatello. On June 10th, they play with percussionist Mauricio Zattarelli on a new album called Into Another Land. At 2 p.m., it's time for What's the Frequency, Kenneth, with stories about Supreme Court rulings, Congress, and the 4th of July. At 3 p.m., we tune in the latest January 6th congressional hearings with a report on Turn on the News. At 4 p.m., it's time for the WGXC Afternoon Show with Tom DiPietro and Selha Graham live from Hudson. At 7 p.m., it's time for Elizabeth Lujudis' Ecolocation Program. At 9, we're live from Toronto with Andrew O'Connor and his Disco 3000 show. And at 10 p.m., it's time for The Magic Stranger with The Magic Stranger Show on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Sunday, July 3rd. World-renowned harpist Mary Lattimore performs at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock at 8 p.m., and you can find out all about the event on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Lattimore has played harp on records with Kurt Vile, Thurston Moore, Sharon Van Etten, Meg Baird, and many others, and comes from Los Angeles to Woodstock on Sunday, July 3rd at the Colony Cafe at 8 p.m. Go to WGXC.org in the community calendar to find out more about this event and many others.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I mean, they are moving too slow in terms of the promise of creating a more humane border and passing immigration reform.
Fernando Garcia, executive director of the Border Network for Human Rights, criticized the Biden administration's border policies. After more than 50 migrants died in an abandoned tractor trailer without air conditioning. At the NATO summit in Madrid, President Biden announced a permanent headquarters for U.S. forces in Poland, where 10,000 troops are stationed, and new deployments of troops and weapons to Europe. He also met with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who praised U.S. efforts to partner with Turkey to help get grain out of Ukraine and Russia.
There are countries deprived of the grains, and we will open corridors and we will allow them to have access to the grains that they so need.
Officials testified before lawmakers on a plan to support non-citizen service members, deported veterans, and their family members to receive entitled benefits. Deborah Rogers of the Department of Homeland Security spoke about helping their families.
They call on us to do our best, to follow through, and to leave no one behind.
The U.S. Supreme Court Wednesday ruled states can prosecute non-Native Americans who commit crimes against Native Americans within indigenous reservations. Meanwhile, Justice Stephen Breyer retires from the Supreme Court Thursday after the court releases its final rulings of the term. Conservatives praised the court's recent decisions expanding religious rights in two rulings involving a religious school in Maine and a Seattle high school football coach. Managing attorney at the Liberty Justice Center, Daniel Sir.
This Supreme Court is the most protective of religious liberty that we perhaps have ever seen.
Liberal groups countered the court's decisions compromise the separation of church and state. Legal director of the group Freedom from Religion, Rebecca Market.
What we saw in this last week was an enormous loss of religious liberty rights for individual taxpayers and young public school children who do not adhere to the majority faith.
Housing advocates testified on rising home prices in a virtual hearing before the House Financial Services Committee. Democratic North Carolina Representative Alma Adams noted the market's growing inequality.
In my city of Los Angeles, the Black home ownership rate was 34% in 2021, lower than it was in 1910.
Finally, some House lawmakers want Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to take additional and urgent action to combat anti-Semitism after incidents in the U.S. reached an all-time high. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Lost among Tuesday's testimony by Cassidy Hutchinson to the January 6th committee was a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court restoring racially gerrymandered congressional districts in Louisiana. A conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with Governor John Bel Edwards, who argued that since black citizens make up one-third of Louisiana's population, congressional districts should be drawn to include two majority-minority districts. But the U.S. Supreme Court now says that the legislature's map should be used, pending another case this fall. Now, instead of two districts out of six, black voters have only one, with the districts manipulated by the legislature to dilute black, more liberal voting power. In 2013, the court eroded much of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Then in 2019, the court said that redistricting was inherently political and the state should have the ultimate authority. Enter Alabama. In a case similar to Louisiana's, black voters were gerrymandered out of their second congressional district. Lower courts ruled fair maps must be drawn, but the high court issued a stay in February pending a full hearing of the case in October. But even if the gerrymandered maps were thrown out, not likely with the current rogue court, it would come too late for African-American voters in Alabama and Louisiana to have a real say in their government. Links to more information on the decision and groups taking action are at our website, AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. Granny D said, democracy is not something we have, it's something we do. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, June 30th. Early this morning, we see a pretty normal and comfortable temperature range of 54 in Red Falls to 60 degrees in Annandale on Hudson. Soil temperature is registering at 65 degrees. We're going to see a high of 84 at 4 p.m. If you stay out of the sun, it should just feel warm, though, with the dew points in the low 50s. Overnight, it is still comfortable for sleeping. We hit 62 degrees. Tomorrow afternoon, temperatures max out at 93 degrees by 3 p.m. Just before dark, storm chances hit the area and continue overnight as temperatures fall to a muggy 70 degrees. More rain falls all of Saturday with a high of 82. Rain stops before dark and we see a low of 60 degrees. And that will be on Sunday morning. Then the temperature bounces back up to 83 on a dry Sunday afternoon. Pollen levels for today will be medium. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:25 a.m., then low tide at 11:26 a.m. High tide again at 5:11 p.m., then low tide once again at 11:14 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 74 degrees. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see a near-hit coronal mass ejection is expected to pass close enough to cause some geomagnetic disturbances today. Solar wind speed is currently 409 kilometers per second at 2.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 15 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board with good conditions below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 48. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Randall and Bernadette Martin of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Hey, you're tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. We're going to speak with Oshun Zotik in a few minutes. He is the Hudson candidate for Congress who is no longer a candidate for Congress, and we're going to find out why in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. This is Augusto Pablo on the WGXC Morning Show.
Jacqueline and Bill. Two men who gambling. Stackley drove seven, Billy swore that he drove eight. Breaks!
Wrong him, boy, you start all over again, huh?
Why do you try to cheat in such a small, small game? Don't you know it was wrong to cheat the trying men? Don't you know it was wrong to cheat the trying men? Don't you know it was wrong to cheat the trying men? Don't you know it was wrong to cheat the trying men? Someday trample people under your feet, you better stop. It is a wrong emboyant.
Eros görüyor musun?
Aa, barakuda var. Bana bak.
Mozambik'e gidiyoruz.
Gidiyoruz. Bak barakuda'ya bak. Barakuda. Gördün mü? Mozambik'e gidiyoruz. Bana bak. Kılıç balığı. Çok
güzel.
Thank you.
Harper's Bazaar there on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Tom Rowe live in Accra, and we are now joined by Ocean Zotique from Hudson. Are you there, Ocean?
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning. It is good to talk to you again on this beautiful day. And the big news is this week that you were a congressional candidate for the New York 19 race last week, but this week you are not. You want to explain to listeners what's up with that?
Yeah, I know we started off talking about land stewardship on Twitter, but the big news is that, as our nation's first transgender non-binary person to run for federal elected office, I did actually decide to exit this particular race effective tomorrow. So that was a hard decision, and leaders have to make hard decisions every day. And we just realized that we did not have the necessary means and resources at our disposal to go ahead and be successful in challenging Republican Dutchess County Executive Marcus Molinaro in the election in November. So we went ahead and decided to just exit the race and just continue from there. We're definitely not done caring about this newly created district, upstate New York, and certainly I look forward to potentially running again wherever might be most needed to be of service. So that's the hot scoop.
And just to give our listeners, the election season is very confusing this year. On August 23rd, there are going to be two elections for New York 19. Pat Ryan and Mark Molinaro are running in one to replace, to finish Antonio Delgado's term. They'll be in office for 3 months or something. And some of that, Congress will be on vacation. But also on August 23rd, there is a primary election for the new New York 19 district that's been changed and is goes much farther west now. Jamie Chaney from Dutchess County and Josh Riley from out in near Ithaca and Binghamton are still in the primary to decide who's going to challenge Mark Molinaro in November for the new district. So I don't even know how to say that non-confusingly.
I think you did a great job, for sure. And the only thing I would just reflect back to just help communicate would be that we're currently in the 117th Congress, and we're getting ready in November to elect people to the 118th Congress. Every time we turn over, we have a new Congress, if you know what I mean. So somebody has to finish up Antonio's office in the 117th Congress. And that is the special election between Pat and Marcus. And then somebody else is going to need to occupy the seat for the 118th Congress. And that person will either be, as you said, Josh or Jamie or Marcus. And that's the November election. So, yeah, and unfortunately, it seems to me that it'd be pretty easy for a Republican to vote on August 23rd because they get to vote for the same name twice in a row, right? It's an easy choice. But for folks that are Democrats or et cetera, you know, it may be a little confusing because, you know, who is, what's going on here with all these different names and all these different leaders? And if I'm not mistaken, Josh is also going to, this part is endorsed by the Working Families Party for CD19 too. So there's going to be all these crazy things to look at visually on the ballot slip of paper. And I just would hate for the voters to feel confusion in any way.
Yeah, I had not seen that Josh Riley is endorsed by the Working Families Party. I believe Jamie Cheney got endorsed by a women's group earlier this week, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, allow me to give some correct information. So I was unable to be endorsed by Working Families Party for CD19. Josh was endorsed by the Working Families Party for CD22.
Oh, he was previously, yeah.
Previously, and then Jamie Cheney was endorsed by the Working Families Party for State Senate District 41. So when the changes took place, Josh changed gears from 22 to 19, and Jamie and her team changed gears from Senate District 41 to CD19. And then I built a team from scratch and gathered over 1,000 signatures to mount my campaign kind of from scratch. So I'm very proud of what we accomplished, and I have great respect for Josh and Jamie. I know that either one of them would do a really lovely job representing us in Washington. But I'm here to talk a little bit more about my platform and my story as well, for sure, and any question that you have, honestly. It's always a pleasure to speak with WGXC.
Yeah, I listened to the congressional forum that was it the Tioga County? What one, Tompkins County?
Tompkins County.
Tompkins County, yeah. Held a was it last Monday?
Yeah.
And I have to say, I'm not getting into specific platforms, but to me, just as a listener, it seemed like I didn't get as much from Josh and Jamie. Personality-wise, and you seem to be the. It was easier to listen to you. Josh and Jamie seem more. I don't want to use the word droning on, but it was harder to listen closely to them because you had a better had a more personality. Let's say that in the it was easier to hear what you were saying to my ears.
Thank you. I can't speak for anybody else, but I know that for me, my intention in the candidates forum are to connect with the Democratic voters and party members of that county. And so that is a person, that is a person-to-person connection. It's not a policy summit, and it's not an academic conference, and it's also not a debate between candidates. So for me, my intention was to simply lay out who I am and what I'm all about. And I certainly did drop in platform details into my remarks. But I definitely thank you because I did make sure to speak very slowly and intentionally and to convey kind of my who I am. And that is above and beyond the words that I'm saying. It's also the way that I'm saying them and how I'm presenting as, and how I'm showing up as a leader in this community. And I think that showing up in a leadership role is more than just having all the right answers, if you will.
Are you going to endorse one of the other Democrats in the race, or are you staying out of that?
I am really proud, actually, to make an endorsement right here and right now And who I want to endorse is Jillian Hanlon, our first transgender woman and Democratic nominee for Dutchess County Sheriff.
Hmm.
She is a subject matter expert on police behavioral emergency response. And I think she has the strength and leadership to not only serve Dutchess County well and keep all our residents safe, but also the fortitude that I know is required to step up and be that historic first. We're always going to have those obstacles when we're the first, and she is ridiculously smart and strong. So I'm actually wanting to endorse her. And I certainly would like to help support District 19 in still being a progressive seat in the House of Representatives. But at this precise moment in time, I'm not comfortable endorsing one of the two candidates, you know, to the detriment of the other, because I had the opportunity to enter the scene and become colleagues with both Josh and Jamie. And I have really positive experiences with both of them, and they both have different qualifications. So as of this precise moment in time, we are not endorsing. We definitely want everybody to vote for Pat, and we definitely want to have everybody vote for either Jamie or Josh. But yeah, I hope that makes sense to everybody, that's where we're at least for the time being.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. I mean, to me, I think it's probably safe to say that 90% of voters have no idea who they're voting for yet. Right? Hardly anybody knows who Josh Riley or Jamie Chaney is at this moment.
Yeah. And if I had substantial experience that would tell me that it would be detrimental to have one of these folks be our representative, I certainly would endorse the correct person. But given that they both have unique strengths, I would go ahead and say two things. I would say that having got the chance to get to know both of them a little bit, I would say that Josh Riley is the son of a mother and the husband of a wife and one of the most powerful legal advocates for civil equality that I've ever met in my short time. So he is a very talented attorney and advocate who could do a great job. I would also say that Jamie Chaney is my neighbor in the Hudson Valley and a remarkably strong female chief executive of a business. And to me, her literal vocal cords resonate from an embodied experience of overcoming sexism. And I appreciate that deep well of firsthand experience, especially in this moment when gender equality is so imperiled. So I think that's fair for me to say those things about my new colleagues.
So I want to go back to 2018 for a moment. 2018 was the last time there was a Democratic primary with multiple candidates for New York 19. And
I think there were seven.
Yeah, there were a lot. There were so many that year because everyone believed that a Democrat could really win because there was the blue wave. People were so upset about the occupant of the White House at that time. And it turned out to be true. But the criticism that was leveled at all seven of those candidates was that they had never run for office before. Now that some of them have gone on. David Clegg is now the Ulster County DA, and I don't know what Garrett Roach is doing now. He worked for Cuomo for a while. Pat Ryan, obviously, is the Ulster County executive. But do you think that's a problem? Because, again, we had three candidates this year. I mean, you ran for Hudson School Board, but as a write-in at the last minute, which is a whole other Hudson problem that happens over and over again. Nobody signs up to run for Hudson School Board in time. Do you think that's a problem of running for political office without having done so before?
No, I think it's a fantastic contribution to our democracy for leaders that are willing to step up and take on all of the challenges that are involved with election law and campaign financing. I think that if I learned any one positive lesson from President 45, it's that you don't have to be an elected official in order to become an elected official. So if somebody is of good character and has strong leadership and good policymaking ability, there's nothing holding them back for running. And I think it's wonderful that people want to participate in elected office. We keep saying that we want change. And to me, you know, within reason, obviously, that's part of what change looks like. It looks like electing folks, a broader range of folks. 27% of the entire Congress is female. So what's it going to take to have 50% representation or accurate representation in these elected bodies that more matches our demographic? And so I think it's fantastic. I also think that over time, maybe we will come to appreciate new ways of understanding a person's skill set and capacity to be a good leader outside of how many offices have they held. Just to wrap up this remark with a for instance, you know, in Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, the founders laid out age requirements to federal office, that a Congress, that a representative needs to be over 25, senator needs to be over 30, and a president needs to be over 35. To me, that is ludicrous now, because what it meant to be a 12-year-old in ancient Egypt has nothing to do cognitively and scientifically with what it means to be a 12-year-old in upstate New York in 2022. And likewise, 35 in 1776 meant one thing, but literally, like, looking at lifespan development and brain science, which I know from my doctoral training in education, I think that that is out of touch. And so this concept of age or having already held a bunch of other offices, like, I think we need to seriously reevaluate the criteria that we're using to evaluate somebody's fitness to serve. And I will also say that it's been weaponized against women and some of our minorities. You know, and I certainly was the target of that too. What makes you think you're fit to serve? Ultimately, the kinds of experiences that are open to us are distinct based on our paths. And so I don't mean to go off on a huge rant, but let's just recall this ancient Roman myth of Cincinnatus. He was literally a farmer working and plowing his fields. And when he realized that new leadership was needed, he stepped up. And he became, you know, a Roman official for his empire. So to me, I think it's actually a great positive, and we can certainly come up with more creative and innovative ways to help do quality control, if you will.
Yeah, and we can also look at the flip side of that. Someone like, I'm trying to lead into my next question, but someone like Kevin Cahill has been in the New York Assembly for, I think, 30 years or 30 elections or, I don't know, some a long, long time. And there's certainly downsides to someone being in office for a very long time. But my next question was going to be about...
Term limit.
Yeah. Well,
maybe we'll save that for another time.
Well, I'm against term limits because that's limiting someone's choice. You know, saying you can't vote for this one particular person seems un-American to me, but maybe not. I see the benefits too.
It's a whole other discussion. I definitely have lots to say about it too.
I was trying to get us to how costly it is to. Run for Congress, and I brought up Kevin Cahill because I was going to bring up Sarah Hanna Cherise, who just won in Ulster in Dutchess County in a state assembly seat, and she ran this incredible grassroots campaign where, you know, I had a dentist appointment in Ulster County on election day, the last day of voting on Tuesday, and there were people on the street holding signs like in kind of out of the way places with wearing her t-shirts in the hot sun, you know, and there were no other candidates that had representatives out. That would seem to be a model for a progressive candidate. But I don't know if you can do that on the scale of a congressional district or, you know, how much money do you need to run a congressional campaign?
Yeah. I mean, heaven forbid if Marcus wins, I certainly have a full 2 years to put together my progressive grassroots coalition. but let me just answer your question. And yes, I also celebrate that amazing achievement that happened. But yeah, Josh Riley and I really, I think, agree when we both say that the current situation in campaign finance is a horrible morass. It costs seven figures to mount a fully professional, industry standard congressional campaign. And that's because you have to pay your professional staff, obviously. You also have to purchase advertising. You have to put together an entire campaign budget. And we're not like Germany or Sweden. We don't have those kinds of elections where you're not allowed to spend your own money or other people's. So if you're a billionaire or if you're friends with billionaires or if you've got a lot of PAC money, like some of my colleagues on the other side, you get to use those resources and you can put your name out on every single TV station and on every single billboard, you know? And so I learned a whole lot about campaign finance this time around. And I also learned a whole lot about election law, which frankly is a little bit outdated, ableist, and dangerous. You know, and I don't mean to complain in any way, it's just what I truly learned. If somebody's a straight white male, I think that they're going to have a little bit more safety pounding the pavement, knocking doors and walking around and approaching strangers, asking them for thousands of petition signatures. And it helps if you can hire lots of staff to help you do that. So the petition requirements are really strange in this state, and it's the entire system of ballot access is a little bit arcane. And so for me personally, you know, I have a my.ny.gov account where I do my motor voter registration and I do a bunch of other services with the state, and I personally see absolutely no reason to not vote online. I'm definitely not going so far as voting online, but nominating a candidate's petition, I personally see no reason why we couldn't do it under the Motor Voter website, because we're not voting. We're just doing a digital click that constitutes legally binding signature. And if we learned one thing from COVID, it's that DocuSign and digital signatures are valid signatures. So that's my two cents on all that. And I love this grassroots idea. I mean, we might not have $3 million and we might not have a, you know, a kitchen sink of a Washington strategist, but we have our neighbors and we have love, you know, and that's what should win elections, people standing in the community. So I think that's beautiful what happened with the assembly yesterday.
All right, we only have a little less than 4 minutes left, so I'll get to the question that started or got you here.
Okay.
WGXC tweeted last week, I guess. Mainly, we definitely wanted to hear what the candidates had to say, but mainly we wanted to make sure the candidates knew about, because it doesn't seem like anybody mentions that. You know, people talk about Hoosick Falls and Newburgh, but nobody seems to mention that there are forever chemicals, PFOS, PFOA, in the drinking water in the town of Cairo, in the New Lebanon School, and in the village of Alasia, and out of the district in Nassau, in Rensselaer County. And, you know, hundreds and thousands of other communities across the United States. And doesn't seem like much is being done about it. The EPA, I guess, last week did come up with some new regulations. What do you want to say on that issue?
Yeah, thank you. Definitely, it's a very important issue. And I just want to briefly say, as myself, that I believe I was the only candidate that used the term land stewardship as part of the platform. That really embodies my relationship to land, both real estate law and also land and how we treat it with respect and real sacred dignity. This issue of forever chemicals in the water is very close to home for me because I literally used to own a home in the town of Berlin, which was affected by the PFOAs leached by Saint-Gobain and others in the Hoosick Falls region. And I used to go visit Rinpoche over in Petersburg, and all the trees in his front yard died in front of his house and his little meditation cottage. They died and they had to get cut down because of the Teflon in the root system of the trees. So it's horrendous. Paul Tonko was the, you know, congressperson in District 20, I believe, who helped deal with that. And, so we need to take these issues of environmental violence, you know, environmental damage very seriously and hold everybody accountable for protecting our kids and families' drinking water. So I appreciate the consciousness that's being built up around all these other sites, particularly in Cairo, where I visited. And it's, to me, it's both about taking our water seriously, but also taking our land seriously and our air, you know, land stewardship. So thank goodness, you know, 45's out of office because he wanted to mine uranium out of the Grand Canyon. Like, it's not a joke. You know, in a world where Native American tribes don't have the right to encumber, aka to raise capital and mortgage their property to start a business, they can't do that because part of their title under real estate law is held by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. In a world where the Hudson River is not safe to swim in, you know, in a world where the Rural Development Office is inadequate right now to administer the zero down mortgages and income-based